Hello and welcome to the Tiny Plastic People podcast, the podcast that is about tiny plastic people. We paint them, we play with them, and sometimes we talk about them on a podcast and put the podcast on a website called Tiny Plastic People. In the special episode of Tiny Plastic People, we're going to be talking about the hit skirmish war game from a little indie game studio that you might not have heard of called Games Workshop. The game's called Warcry. It's small. And it fits on a small table and it's got lots of little guys in it. I think it's pretty neat. I am your host, Rachel. I'm joined today by...
I'm John.
Yep. I'm John. Yep. And JD.
Hello.
Yeah, as I said, this is a Warcry special. We're going to skip the usual sort of like hobby catch-up and stuff. And we're just going to get straight into talking about... Warcry, because a new edition of the game has just come out with a updated, revised war rules and a whole new sort of like setting and a big whale box for the whales like me. Yeah, there's lots to talk about. John, what excites you about Warcry? What are your Warcry credentials? What makes you a Warcry expert?
I think expert is the right word, but fan? Stan? I stan for Warcry. Yeah, I got into Warcry as soon as it dropped. I remember AOS, they did the AOS skirmish game around the same time as Warhammer Underworlds, and it was completely unbalanced and batshit crazy. And I think... discovered the most overpowered thing was like a branch, which were a B spell that could just annihilate everyone because of the way the rules worked. But the idea of small scale AOS, just a small warband, but in that setting, just seemed like the best idea to me. And Warcry over the last 3 years has proved me right, I think. It's the secret GW best game ever. Like all the non core games are the secret GW best game ever.
Hard agree.
I would make a similar point about Kill Team being the secret best GW game.
Well, on that note, JD, putting Kill Team aside, what makes Warcry the second best GW game?
For me, it was... So I was never that into the idea of a skirmish game. Not like a dislike thing, but just I never really thought about it. But what got me was the core like fantasy and setting of it. Like the... a bunch of little weirdos having a big fight in the 8 points to get Daddy Archaon's attention. Like, being a Chaos player, that was already, like, I'm into that. But then, they showed those first two warbands, the Untamed Beasts and the Iron Golems, and I loved them both. And then, it turned out the game was also really good because you can kick people off ledges, and every game should have kicking people off ledges ever.
Yeah. Very much the Dark Messiah of tabletop skirmish.
Yeah, exactly.
What is a Warcry? How does it work, John? Care to explain?
So Warcry is what's called an alternating activation turn-based skirmish game. That's a mouthful, isn't it? But basically, unlike sort of the bigger GW games like 40k or AOS, where you have your turn where you move everything on your side and then the opponent gets to move all their stuff, it's literally you move one of your guys, then the person, your opponent or opponents, then take turns reacting to that within the same game turn. So it's quite tactical in that respect, because obviously you're reacting to what's just happened potentially, or ignoring it and doing your own thing. That can often be quite hard. But it's also very small scale. So typical warband is sort of 8 fighters, 10 fighters, some as low as 3. So there's not a lot going on. It's in a small board, but you can really sort of focus on the action of those individuals and them being characters. And I think one thing that we probably should get across is the real joy of Warcry isn't having an individual match, but it's stringing those together in a campaign and seeing your fights develop or die or take injuries and then having to just retire them anyway. And just having that move along on the path to glory for Archeon's attention or anyone else's now.
Yeah. Like, how big of a board? Like, is what kind of table dimensions are we talking here? Like, dining table, coffee table, bedside table?
It's coffee table. I can't remember the exact dimensions. It's something by 11 inches. I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember either. It can't be. It's got to be more than 11 inches.
Is it not 22 by 30?
Yes.
I think it's the same. Yeah, because it's the same as Kill Team.
Okay. The facts haver has arrived. JD, do you have anything else to add about like what Warkai is?
As John mentioned, the stringing stuff together into a campaign is probably my favourite part of it and the part that I pay the most attention to. Like, I'm an absolute sucker for campaign systems generally because I like to add context to, you know, I don't necessarily just want to play a war game where you have a game and that's it. I like to have it be like a narrative almost. And Warcry gives you like such good systems for that. Like, the lasting injuries and finding artifacts that you can then use later to, I don't know, fuck people up or whatever. But yeah, it's the alternating activations, as mentioned, are fantastic. Like, one of my bugbears with war games generally, particularly AOS and 40K, is the whole standing around doing nothing while your opponent does bad things to you and you can't really do anything about it. And yeah, Warcry just doesn't have that at all. You just sort of, yeah, it's very I go, you go. You get to get revenge quickly if you're one of your guys goes down.
Although just on that point, it's probably worth saying, you get to do nothing. You know, the opponent rolls damage and you just take damage. There's no saves, there's nothing. It's just everyone just gets hurt very easily.
But you don't have to wait very long until it's then your turn to go and punch them back. But we'll put a pin in that because like that is something that has changed with the new edition. It's stuff you can do in your opponent's turn. I guess does anyone have like a favorite thing about Warcry? I guess we kind of already covered it, but we did put together a little peek behind the podcast curtain here. We did put together a Google Doc with a rough outline of what we would say in the podcast. And I have accidentally gone completely off of it and now trying to steer us back on.
Become ungovernable.
Yeah.
It's Archeon's influence. It's the 8 points. The chaos is seeping through. What I was going to talk about, I think, is there's a real cinematic feel to the games. I think that they sort of build it that way. And the way that the fighters move, the very tactile nature of the verticality of the games, and it's very high movement based. You know, you're throwing your fighters off buildings to then attack people and things like that. I think it really does make it seem like an epic battle in a Lord of the Rings movie, or maybe not an epic battle, maybe a minor skirmish where one side is completely outmatched by the other. But still, a battle from a movie is often how it feels to me when I'm playing.
Well, the Warcry thing, right? If you're going to take the Lord of the Rings analogy, like Age of Sigmar is playing the Pelennor Fields, and Warcry is playing the ambush at Amon Hen, right? Like that's the point of comparison in my mind.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like another fight of similar size in the Lord of the Rings. I got thinking about whether there's one where the hobbits are just fighting other hobbits, because that's sometimes what it feels like in Warcry.
the bit in Return of the King where all the orcs have a fight inside the tower.
Yes, that's it right there. Yeah. And none of them matter. They all just want the attention of the Dark Lord. And they're just going to kill each other and nobody will notice and they will not be missed. So the game came out originally in 2019. I remember buying the big box, which was at the time the biggest box that GW had ever put out, and it was just like a brick, a large brick of plastic and paper. And it was great. You got like these two warbands, you got a bunch of chaotic beasts of two different varieties.
Yeah, I only realised today they haven't done chaotic beasts since in the main box, have they?
I know. Yeah. Sad. But we'll get to that. And you got like a bunch of sort of ruined buildings that were great for sort of like, got some stairs, and you could, it was all modular and you could configure it in all these different ways. Yeah, and then sort of since then they've released similar big boxes along with just like terrain boxes and more warbands, and they've added rules for warbands from Age of Sigmar factions and things like that. So basically if you have Age of Sigmar models, then you can play war, and why wouldn't you? And then in, I guess, like, late 2021, it started to feel like they were maybe gearing up towards a new, something like actually, like, changing Warcry, doing a new edition, because they love to do a new edition of a thing every 3 years. Initially, I was like, no, we don't need a new edition of Warcry. It's perfect in every single way. But then it became clear that they were in fact doing a new edition, and I was a bit worried that it was going to be like, it was going to change all the things I liked and add things that I didn't like, and I don't know, I got a bit worried, but it turned out my worries were not founded, and they'd done a good job. But like, I was wondering what the two of you felt like, what were you hoping for in the new edition, in the sort of, when you first heard that they were doing sort of an update to the rules, John?
I just really wanted them to not change too much, because I'm old and my brain can't cope with too much change on rules. I just wanted something to tighten it up a little bit, and I think we've read, and when they released the last big box before Harvko Red Harvest, they had done a new version of the core rules, and they'd incorporated all the FAQs and things like that, so it was just a little bit tighter. So then, yeah, a new edition, it was like, oh, I don't know what else they're gonna do, but yeah, just I didn't want too much change. That's frank. New settings, new models, yeah. New warbands, whatever, but yeah, not too much rules change, please.
Yeah,
JD.
Indeed.
JD. Yeah, I largely felt the same. Like, I feel like the first edition of Warcry just didn't miss, you know? Like, it just came out and it was brilliant. It didn't really need anything, well, much adding. Yeah, exactly the same. I just tighten up a few little things and not detract from the core thing. I think part of my worry was I remember the issue I had with the first edition of Kill Team was they started adding more and more and more and more to it. So they started bringing out the Elites expansion and Commanders and all that. So suddenly you've taken away from the core fantasy, because now you've got, you know, instead of just being chumps wandering about, you've got Terminators and all this kind of stuff. And it just, yeah, it detracted from that. And I was really hoping that that wouldn't be the way that Warcry went. And it doesn't seem to have done that. It does seem like the new edition is just, it's not added any, you know, huge changes, just nice little things, and just tightened up, you know, the previous rule set, which is great.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, I think Warcry got its like Elites equivalent pretty early on, because they added like the first supplement for OG Warcry was Monsters and Mercenaries, which added monsters and like allied heroes and stuff like that. So suddenly you had these much more powerful fighters in the game. But it always seemed like they didn't sort of outshine everything else. They felt like a really nice sort of addition that, I don't know. I never played Kill Team. I played new Kill Team. I didn't play old Kill Team. So I didn't really understand what people were getting at with, like, oh no, there's Terminators in it now. Because it seemed like you could now do that in Warcry and it seemed to be totally okay, but I guess just very different systems.
The thing with the way that Warcry did it is that it kind of it did it in a way that sort of made sense. So for example, the ability to take, say, a Dark Oath War Queen as an allied hero, that kind of makes sense because, you know, a Dark Oath War Queen would be wondering about, you know, in the 8 point, and so would join up with, you know, this Chaos Warband or whatever to get the attention of the Dark Gods or of the Ever Chosen or whatever. I feel like it was done with Warcry more subtly. And that was the thing that I liked about adding that stuff to Warcry. But then the issue in Kill Team was that it was just, just take your Thousand Sons Scarab Occult and just stick them in there. It'll be fine. And I feel like it just didn't work. Whereas in Warcry, adding a Chaos Spawn or whatever does make sense and works because then you can do stuff. And also just the rule set of Warcry is more conducive to that than the rule set of first edition Kill Team.
Everyone can just spawn at any time on the 8 points, so of course they can play the around. I think the more melee focused and the interacting with the scenery, therefore with these big monsters as well, limits them. They're often more of a hindrance than a help because they can get trapped very easily and be completely ineffective. So I think to me, you know, the big monsters definitely are a disadvantage. And when they often added things like, I think they added a mission in the first one, like in the first time of Champions, for like fight a Varangard, you know, and it was these chumps fighting an elite champion of Chaos on a horse. But they had big glow up rules for those battles, so they could feel epic, as opposed to the rules that they put in for using them. But there's a lot of limitations on, you know, mounted units and where they can go and how they can traverse the battlefield. And I think a lot of the missions help invalidate their use a little bit.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Although get those Stormcast out the 8 points. That's what I say.
I'm just checking in the compendium now if you can take Varangard in your Slaves of Darkness army. I think you can.
In the last one, I can't remember if I've checked the latest
rules. Oh, yes, you can. You sure can. They're all heroes, which is appropriate. Yep. And what cool models. Yep. I guess, like, that's kind of our feelings about our deep anxieties and fear of change.
Of trepidations.
And, yeah, I think, like, personally, it turned out all my fears were sort of unfounded, and if anything, it turned out that actually the original Warcry didn't have everything perfect, didn't have everything right, and there were totally things you could like add in there or change to make it better. And that seems to be what they've done with the new edition, is had a really taken a really light approach to, like, they've acknowledged that it's like this is the perfect war game, and all we need to do is tweak these little things and add just a few more things, and then there's, like, I don't know, what's perfecter than perfect?
GW adding reactions like Salt Bay.
I guess on that note, I take it reactions are the thing you're most excited about with this new rulebook.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so it seems to be part of a trend that GW are doing generally now, which is adding systems like this to most of their games. Where so in AOS third edition now, you've got command abilities that are used in your opponent's turn, like Unleash Hell. In Horus Heresy 2.0, there's now a whole system called reactions that you can do, and now obviously in Warcry second edition as well. And it's something that I really like as a trend, because again, it is that thing of, I don't want to stand there for, you know, 45 minutes while my opponent has their entire turn and I do nothing. Like, I may as well go make a cup of tea or look at my phone or whatever, and then they just tell me if I need to do something. Mm-hmm.
The GW Design Studio collectively are coming for your micro naps.
But yeah, I like the ability to be like, you know, something happens to you. So there's the reaction that I like the look of the most in new Warcry is counter, which is the one where when you get targeted by attacks, you then get to interrupt with your reaction and do damage back. That's really cool. Like, just stuff like that, where you get an opportunity to flip things back on your opponent in an interesting way. Like, yeah, I'm a sucker for anything like that, and I hope this trend continues across all their games and just we get more stuff like that.
Yeah, totally. But, on the subject of reactions, there's three universal reactions that everyone can do. They are counter, take cover, and strike them down. In the like 4-5 games of second edition I've had so far, I have only ever used counter because it's the one that when someone attacks you, you might get to do damage back before die or whatever, which is always good. The other one, take cover, is feels a little bit less relevant because it's basically if you're in cover, you can use it to it doesn't seem particularly reliable. It's like a way to just mitigate damage from ranged attacks, but you already need to be in cover anyway, so I would just chance it.
It's more situational, right?
Yep. And then there's another one called Strike Them Down, which is a D&D attack of opportunity, which I've not used because I do not remember. I'm telling myself that, yeah.
I mean,
I will use it.
Only counters disengage anyway, obviously. So, you know, chances of getting to use it. But D6 damage, you know, you've always got that bit where you've got a little skirmish and someone's going to disengage to try and get the objective. And now you've got a way to, you know, deal them some serious damage. They can think twice about it or when they time it, which is quite good.
But couldn't you just let them move away? And then
move an attack,
run up to them and hit them. I guess it depends how like far they're going. I don't know. I'll think about it. I'm definitely going to try and use it. And then every warband gets its own special reaction. And I guess like some of them are really cool. And some of them are a bit like, we had to make 100 of these. So a lot of them kind of feel like different ways of writing the counter special rule,
just with a different name to fit the warband that it's with. Exactly.
Yeah,
and I watched
pick out.
I watched a battle report the other day, and the guy was spamming counter at every opportunity with his fighters. I'm going, just wait, you guys are not going to die, just hit back and you'll do more damage. So there is a bit of a, you know, it's new and it's people are excited about them, but you've still got to apply thought because basically it costs you an action for one of your fighters, or two actions. You could do more than one reaction. So, yeah. Still got to apply that thought.
Yeah, I think it's a really good subsystem that they've added. John, what else? What else excites you about the new edition?
Yeah, so I think we touched on it quite a bit earlier with Judging D and me talking about the campaign system, but when Warcry first launched, it was a very light touch on the campaign. In fact, there was a bit, if anyone had criticisms about the game at the time, it was that it was a bit too light touch on there. I liked some parts of the light touch because you couldn't get behind too much. There was no cost, basically, to death. So in a big campaign with some friends, nobody could get left behind and just on a losing spiral of pain or whatever and just stop enjoying it. But what they've done is they've taken all the campaign mechanics, which I think were Tome of Champions 2020, so that was
they're definitely like some of them they sort of did already in the Tome of Champions and they've kind of consolidated them in here, but I guess like some of them also feel like they're like the quest system and stuff like that feels like it's kind of like the Age of Sigmar Path of Glory system then, which was itself sort of an evolution of the Warcry system, is now like being ported back into Warcry or something like that. Anyway,
certainly what I was going to say. I think each year they've iterated on the campaign system as almost optional mechanics, and they've gone from sort of a very prescriptive, right, you do these battles, then you do that special battle, then you do these battles, and at the end you get a thing, to, you know, basically choose your own adventure things in the Red Harvest last year, and yeah. Now they've moved on to these sort of amazing interactive campaigns. I'm going to have to say I haven't had a chance to, you know, play more than a couple of matches in a campaign so far because it's quite new. But, you know, there's special rules for different teams fighting against each other and all sorts to make them really quite interesting and interactive now. So, yeah, they've really upped the ante on that. But it still doesn't take an hour after a battle to work out what's happened. It's still like 5 minutes to work through. So it's good.
Yeah, totally. JD, any thoughts on the campaign system?
Yeah, it's it's nice that now it's got a bit more impact. Like you say, death is no longer just something you can gloss over. Like there is actually consequences for your fighters being taken out or your leaders being taken out. Yeah, I'm pleased with like a bit more granularity, but I think I've seen arguments for, you know, people wanting Mordheim style, like ultra granular system. I'm really glad that it isn't that, because I like granularity, but not too much. I think there's a level you can get to where it's just fussy. And I think Warcry would not benefit from being fussy. It doesn't, it's not, in other ways, it is not a fussy game.
100% like, with you.
I don't think, yeah, there's a point with adding complexity where you add too much and it doesn't benefit anybody. It just detracts from the experience. So I like Warcry's sort of meet in the middle. There's some granularity there. You can make choices and stuff, and there is ways to think about it and that, but you don't get completely bogged down in decision hell where there's like 50 different things that can happen and you've got to figure out which one applies and how that knocks onto everything else.
Yeah, like you don't have to choose new shoelaces for your zombie after they, I don't know, suffer some kind of very esoteric thumb injury in the post-game sequence. Yeah, I feel like it's got the right balance now. Like, so I've only done one campaign battle so far, and it was a complete bloodbath for me. I, like, all but two of my guys died in the battle. Not died, but were taken out of action in the battle. And it was just my leader and this one guy left. And so, like, I think most of the guys who were taken out of action survived. In sort of various states of injuredness, which like isn't a huge penalty. There's a bunch of different injuries that you can end up applying, but most of the time they're kind of okay. What happened though was the one guy, apart from my leader who had survived, I rolled, so like they can sort of level up from experience gating. Basically, you just roll a dice to see if they get a level of reputation or renown. I can't remember which one it is. They're both two separate things in the campaign system. One applies to war bands and one applies to individuals. I think it's renown for individuals. But anyway, so this surviving guy got his like two levels, his like extra level of renown and stuff like that, because I chose him because he survived and I was very proud of him. And then after the battle, you can choose to send one of the fighters who wasn't taken out of action into the jungle to explore and find things. And I rolled like a one on the exploration table and he got eaten by a beast. And now like I didn't even get enough glory from the battle to like fully replenish my warband. So I'm now like one guy short because I foolishly sent him into the jungle when I should not have.
You should always send to the jungle. What else is the point of fighting in the jungle?
Yeah.
That's what you're there for.
Always jungle.
Yeah, it's probably...
because something... I don't know anything about like League of Legends, but I'm sure there's a reference in there somewhere. What workshop?
Jungler role or something. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, it's probably worth saying that, isn't it? But there's always this chance to get extra artifacts and things. And again, they're like touch, and they tend to be consumable or perishable or... there could be ways to heal those injuries that your fighter's got.
Yeah, like my opponent in the post-game sequence sent someone out to explore, and they found a like magic fountain and got some delicious mineral water. Well, my guy got eaten by a beast.
There's a lot of beasts. There's a lot of beasts. It's good. It's good. We didn't say that, actually. We're no longer fighting for Archeon's attention in Chaos anymore. We're in gear in the realm of beasts, trying to raid a corrupted Seraphon ship for magic artifacts.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, like, let's talk about the setting for the new edition. Would one of you like to set the scene?
Basically, a long, long time ago, in a land of Gur far, far away, some Seraphon...
What is Gur?
Yeah,
explain.
Age of Sigmar is based around all these realms, which are a bit like... Sorry, the Star Wars reference there is because they're a bit like Star Wars planets. Each realm has one theme. So, yeah.
normally people like compare them to like Planescape or something like that. I was not expecting Star Wars planets, but I guess it makes sense.
I was trying to tie it back. So what you've got is you've got realms of light, realms of death, and you've got, in this case, the realm of beasts. So big monsters live there. A lot of orcs live there. And basically this spaceship that the Seraphon use, big spaceships that was full of artifacts, magical artifacts that are so precious that they hid them away in space from everyone, somehow accidentally crash lands in Gur, and it's...
The one thing we didn't want to happen.
Exactly, and wouldn't you believe it, they normally have these engines that can terraform an area so they can make it a nice jungle for them to live in. Seraphon are lizard people, I should have said that as well. And unfortunately, those have broken a little bit, so they're not working. They are working, but they're not terraforming it into a nice jungle. They're terraforming it into a hideous jungle with walking meat plants and things like that. But it's full of amazing artifacts, so all these people want to go and try and get these artifacts, and they keep getting eaten by trees and each other.
Yeah. It's kind of like a Age of Sigmar take on the kind of like, I guess this they do this a lot in Warhammer, this kind of like lost city or whatever kind of trope, where there's a place like Mordheim or whatever that's full of things that people want. So lots of people are showing up there to fight over it, and it's very good setting for a war game. So like this jungle, which is called the Whirlwood, is full of sort of carnivorous trees and monsters and crashed Seraphon artifacts and I don't know, Seraphon sentry turrets, I guess they have those, that kind of thing. And it's just very dangerous, and there's lots of plunder to be had, and also lots of death to be had.
I was going to say two things. One is that the book is full of amazing pictures, the rule book, full of amazing pictures of some of the beasts that I really hope we get miniatures for some of them at the very least, because there's far more exciting than the chaotic beasts from the first one, I think. The Raptor Victors or whatever in the Furious. There's some really interesting things and some things that have been talked about.
I hope we get some of this. We could get the Thorn Spine Leonax.
Yeah.
Or I'll find another. Keep talking.
So if you like the idea of random mythological beasts, it's certainly well worth picking up the rule book just to get the pictures for those. And then the other thing with this setting is that they've promised a year of updates, effectively, to this setting. So they're along sort of the same lines as they did with Kill Team. So we're going to get a release every few months, which will move the setting along. And we know that sort of the end goal of that is actually infiltrating the Seraphon ship itself. Although I wonder whether that might be year two for Warcry 2, a bit like its Catacombs version.
Warcry into the dark.
Yeah. I guess we'll see. And like they've said that every 3 months they're going to come out with more more of sort of Gnarlwood terrain, or warbands, or sort of story supplements, stuff like that. And
they've adopted the same release schedule as New Kill Team has adopted, where it is essentially a season or whatever every 2 or 3 months, where it's a new box and new stuff, new terrain, whatever, new book and all that. It was cool. I don't feel compelled to keep up with it. I didn't buy the whale box, the new one, the Heart of Gur, purely because I thought I was going to buy the new Kill Team box, and then didn't buy that either.
I know I used this without context in the intro, but when we say whale box, we're referring to a large box full of things that are, you know, like mostly intended for less of a sort of starter set and more of a sort of thing for people who are kind of like super bought in and are definitely willing to part with 100+ pounds of their hard earned bucks.
And the extra house to store it all in.
Yeah. My extra house full of Warhammer bulging at the seams.
They've certainly, all the boxes haven't exactly been stingy with the scenery.
I initially, so I guess we could talk about the Heart of Gur box set. When I looked at it, I was like, oh, this doesn't really excite me. I guess I'll get the new core rule book when it comes out and stuff like that. But I won't get the box. Because I thought that the terrain, it didn't look like there was very much terrain in it from the like photographs they shared. But then it turned out that this terrain is huge. These trees are massive. Like, they're like 11 inches tall or something. It's really weird how they look so small in the photos. I don't know if you had a similar reaction.
When I saw a load of, because I haven't got it either, I wimped out on this one. I got Red Harvest, but I've wimped out on this. But when I saw the pictures of people with the minis, and I'm going, I know how big that is. That is huge. It's really exciting. Also, the day before they released the images of what was going to be in there, I was at a pet shop, and I almost bought like a little gerbil jungle like log bridge as terrain, because I thought, oh, this would be quite good. And then they announced this box with these like little wooden rope bridges that you can build across, and I was like, ah, I'm glad I didn't buy it, but I'm also, oh,
yeah,
they had my idea. But that's so cool.
Pet shops are such a like hidden gem when it comes to like terrain for games. I really need to go and poke around in one.
Yeah, aquarium plants are quite good for like stuff to stick on bases or things like that.
Just like scatter jungle plants like that. Yeah, anyway, I bought the box. I am still painting the terrain. There's so much of it. I've painted the hateful gnarl oaks in a sort of red, fleshy colour because they look like they're made of muscle. They look disgusting.
when Hellraiser has come to visit your trees.
Yeah.
They look amazing. Like, you've done a really good job with them, but they are absolutely vile. Like, just horrible to look at. Like, it is like something out of the bodies exhibit. in the best possible way, it looks really good.
Yeah,
and I think that excites me. What's coming next in these other boxes that we'll get this year? You know, they've hinted at some of the flora and fauna that might be there, but it'd be really interesting to see.
It would be a bit disappointing if they just did more fucked up trees.
Yeah, well, at least they could be.
But they could do that.
Fucked up in different ways. Yeah, this one actually is a human face screaming at you or something. I don't know. And I think they've sort of hinted at mutated feral Seraphon in the ship as well, which that could be quite cool. Like the equivalent of Chaos Spawn Seraphon.
Oh, wow. That is cool. Yeah. anyway, moving on. I think we've covered what is a Warcry, what is the new edition, what is in the big box and stuff like that. But is there anything that has got us like a bit down about the new Warcry or just Warcry in general?
See, I think that my issue with Warcry is largely mitigated by it moving to GUR now, because previously I don't want to say issue, because it wasn't something I was like annoyed about or anything. It was just a bit weird. I always felt like the justifications for some of the factions being involved was a bit flimsy, and it felt a bit like it's so that I think there's a trend with GW stuff where they don't ever want to exclude anybody. Like if you collect a certain army, they don't want you to not be able to use it in whatever thing they bring out. But things like, you know, why is there a small group of Thunderstrike Stormcast wandering about in the 8 points?
I never had this issue with the original one. I thought it made perfect sense that people would show up in the 8 points.
So sorry, go on.
Because, I mean, like, they've got, like, a portal to each of the realms in the 8 points, and there might be more portals sort of in there as well. And particularly, like with Stormcast, like, Thunderstrike Stormcast, they're, like, rangers. They'd be out on missions to, like, figure out what's going on in the 8 points and stuff like that.
See, the Vanguard Stormcast made perfect sense, right? Like the Vanguard Hunters and Paladors and stuff, because they're like the Pathfinders and stuff like that. Like they are Sigmar's special forces, right? But when it's like one Annihilator and three Vindictors,
it was a bit like weirder.
I'd understand if they'd marched through as part of a Storm Host and stuff like that.
But, well, there's your narrative.
Yeah, sure. Like this is why I didn't want to say that it was like a full on issue, really. It was just a bit weird to me. I'd understand, like, you know, a small group of grots looking for bottles, like, I get that. But when you get these factions that normally operate in like huge like battle formations and stuff, like, you know, Ossiarch Bone Reapers, like just things like that, it just always struck me as a little bit odd. Compared to the core thing of like, these are chaos weirdos who have come here from the realm of life, and they worship chaos in the form of a big snake. And their whole thing is they want to work for Archaon, so they're going to kill everybody until Archaon recognizes them and accepts them into his legions. Like, I feel like the fantasy of the chaos warbands that were Warcry specific was just stronger than the narrative for the other factions being there. That's all, really. But like I say, that's mitigated now, because everybody can be in GUR, because everybody is in GUR. Everyone's fighting in GUR all the time, especially given that the main narrative thrust for mainline Age of Sigmar now is focused on GUR and the Realm of Beasts. It makes total sense now. I'm fine with it.
I think when they originally started, the idea was, you know, it's these warbands, they're the lowest of the low. No one's going to miss them. They're not these, you know, they're not the guys you see on an AOS battlefield. I mean, of course, we often see them on an AOS battlefield now, because people can love the Untamed Beast on the AOS Chaos Sources. And like you say, we've got all these forces coming in. And it makes perfect sense from a business point of view to put people in, but it did sort of take away from that fantasy a little bit, I think. I agree with that. I have my favorite warband is my grots, which are bottle knights. They are out looking for bottles. They are riding the squeaks. They are going on the quest. But in general, I think the warbands play a lot better for Warcry than using a random AOS force. I think it's more fun for both opponents if you're using a Warcry warband than.
I think that was certainly true in first edition, but with the new compendium, I think they've done a much better job of balancing the sort of Age of Sigmar warbands against the made for Warcry ones, I think. I mean, I might be totally wrong because I haven't played that many games with the changes yet. But certainly in the first edition, like if you took your iron golems up against a Stormcast warband, they just destroy you. And part of that was because they had access to things like particular kinds of fighters that you just couldn't
long strikes in particular. Long strikes in Warcry kind of were, I don't know if they still are, but they kind of were, I'm gonna point out your leader and now he's dead. And now your other special guy is also dead from a mile away. Like it was just like, okay, like cool.
I think ranged attacks in general are a lot less sort of flexible and powerful now, and that's good. That's one of the changes, actually, that like you can't shoot into combat, which is very good.
Just gotta get there first.
And there's a few other things like that like make the yes warbands that have more access to sort of like flying creatures and shooting creatures and things like that a bit less overpowered compared to the sort of best book ones. But yeah, I don't know. Anyway, other things that are maybe that get us down about Warcry, and in particular the new edition. John, go.
Mine's just a really, really niche one that I don't like from Red Harvest that's carried over, which is the Red Harvest scenery. A lot of the mines are like 1 inch high, which hits this awful point for rules where mounts can't clamber over things more than an inch. But the mines were...
The horsey cannot jump,
but you've got these horses that are next to these mines, and it's like it comes up to the knees of the horse, but you can't jump over it. And of course, the mine tracks were laid all across the board. I was really hoping they might just do something like up it to 1.5 or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a really, really niche one. And to be honest, don't bring your mounts to your Warcry session anyway, in general, for the same reasons we were saying about. Or what I was saying about monsters, you know, these big units, they're harder to maneuver, they get stuck. That's the payoff.
I think people should bring whatever they want, but yeah, that is an example of where the rules maybe don't have quite enough verisimilitude to handle certain kinds of things. Is there anything else that like you're not vibing with?
No, I think I mentioned earlier about worried about getting into sort of the loss loop if you're losing in a campaign and you're losing fighters. But to be honest, there's really some chance that your fighter will die if they're taken out of action. I think it's like 2 or 3 rolls out of a D66 roll that is death. And then depending on who they are, it's probably... you accumulate glory at the end of a battle and you can get quite a lot, even just for taking part. And particularly if you're an underdog and you took part, you can get something like 2 or 3 just for participating. And most fighters will be like 3, 4, maybe 5 for a leader to replace. So you're not going to be at a disadvantage for long, as long as you don't want to be at a disadvantage for long. You might want to choose to use your glory elsewhere to buy some extra points, something else, I don't know, reinforce your warband in a different way. But yeah, it's not a big thing, but it is that little bit of still you can get the bad feels if you end up on a losing streak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As someone who, as I said earlier, after my first battle in my campaign, it's like one fighter down. I hope I am not in the toilet of
the war toilet.
Excellent.
And that's it, especially when it's the first one as well, when you've got nothing to in the bank already to just buy it.
I guess the good news is that it's all uphill from here. Maybe. I'm very positive about Warcry and where it's going. I think it's exciting to be able to say like, hey, there's going to be all this new stuff. One thing I do hope they sort out very soon is that you currently can't buy the core rulebook separately. I'm sure that will be fixed fairly soon as they sort of like start selling the things that are in the big box separately.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to go to eBay and a scalper to get my copy, because every week I check the previews, and even today we're recording on a Sunday and it's not in the previews. It's still not available. It does seem a bit weird. Because it's definitely written like it's going to be the standalone rule book. It's not sort of specific. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing that kind of rubs me the wrong way about this whole sort of release model, is that if you're not super invested like I am, then you, like, how do you get in?
I spent a lot of time, like, in the run-up to the release, and even because it was a two-week pre-order window, and even all the way through that I was still going back and forth on whether to get the big box or not, and ultimately did decide not to, but I came very close purely because that's how you got the core book. Fortunately, they released the core rules for free.
Mm-hmm. But not the campaign stuff.
Which is unfortunate. I decided I only really want one of the warbands out of the box, which is the Horns of Hashut. The dudes with, like, the bull heads and all that, they're rad.
Crowned mine today.
Yeah,
ready to go.
I think if you're gonna do a big box like that, I do think that the core book should come out alongside it, available just on the day. Like, I think it's something that GW have got better about in the last year, but there still is an element of, like, trading on FOMO, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you feel compelled to buy the bigger box because it's otherwise you're going to have to wait for the new stuff, which is fine for some things. But when it comes to, like, the core rule book of a game,
yeah,
I feel like that's one of those things that it's a bit, I'm not a huge fan of using that to generate sales or whatever. Like, it just feels a bit weird to me. Like, I'd rather, you know, because for speaking personally, that doesn't push me to buy the box. That pushes me to not buy the box and just think, well, I'll just wait then. I'll just wait. Like, fine. Like, I don't know. Just weird.
It's definitely weird. And because we're about a month now since the big box came out, I think, maybe just under.
God, don't say that. God.
Something. What? And it's still not available.
Where is the time going?
Yeah. That does feel weird.
I do wonder how much of it is, like, intentional and how much is just, like, they have like a real fire hose of stuff coming out for all of their systems all at once, and it I don't know, there just seems to be an upper limit on how many things they can put out each week,
how many books they can print.
Sometimes that means but I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I guess one little this is more of a quibble than anything, is that the terrain, this new terrain that you get in the box, it's harder to get your guys up on top of it, right? Because it's, like, long suspended bridges, and then these kind of, like, these platforms that don't really have obvious walls to climb up. I think that was one of the strengths of the original box was the runes that you got in it. It was really obvious, like, you could climb up and get people on top of it. You could get people under it. You could add bridges and stuff like that, whereas with this, it's all a bit more, in many different ways it is slightly less practical for actually playing with, no matter how cool it looks. But maybe that will change as they add more stuff to go with it. And on that note, what sort of things are people looking forward to in the future, John?
More warbands. As I say, I think I prefer the game when it's warbands, and I've not had a chance to play against anyone with sort of legacy AOS forces at the moment in the new rules, so hopefully that is better. But the setting and everything just promises, let's get some Zinch warbands, let's get some Dawnbringer Crusade warbands, a little witch hunter group running around in these. That'd be fantastic, you know, an ogre warband with maybe one ogre and about 20 Ignoblars running around. That's what excites me. The possibilities now of moving it away from the Apex. We've got loads of individual flavours of Chaos Warbands. They can still revisit those, they can still add to those, but let's get some different stuff out there, and maybe even something completely left field. Not, you know, the, we won't say the silent people, but maybe something, you know, that isn't a direct AOS link and bring it in. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. What about you, JD?
I'm excited to see, like, more wild terrain that I will never paint or own. known terrain hater. But yeah, also just exactly the same thing as John, really, is just sometimes, like, AOS is at its best sometimes when they are just doing one small group of very distinct weirdos. Like, that's, like, you know, the Underworld warbands are great for this, and all the Chaos warbands from, and also the Shadowstalkers from previous Warcry are some of the best things they do, because it is just, these guys are not going to be a full-on army, but here they are. Here's just, like, 10 sculpts of just really cool freaks, basically. Give me more of that. Just yeah. Pipe it directly into my veins.
Yeah, I guess I'm similar. I just want them to surprise me with cool new bands and weird terrain, and maybe, like, because they've put out so many interesting little campaigns and scenarios and stuff like that over the years for Warcry. I just see them keep doing that. It doesn't have to all be in the Narrowwood. It could be, because they've done stuff in, like, they did like a mini campaign in Ulfenkarn, the setting of Warhammer Quest Cursed City, and another one that was based on all of the stuff from the Age of Sigmar Dominion starter box, where you have, like, the Stormcasts facing off against the Crow Boys and just stuff like that. Like, it's such a great engine for so many little stories, and yeah, I want to see them keep doing that.
I'd like to see, like, extra missions that are, like, as innovative or inventive as here's your group of 10 guys and there is one Varangard, go and kill it, or, like, here's a Gargan, go and kill it, like, just because the things like that are just really cool, and, like, I just want to see more and more of like really inventive scenarios where like outside context problems are added and so on. Like, you know, you've got your two warbands fighting, but oh no, the ground has opened up and trees are eating people, you've got to take this one safe route to escape the board or whatever, just things like that. Like, yeah, just give me that, give me
and,
more
and
stuff.
They've got rules for stuff like, you know, you and your mates fighting as hordes of enemies coming on and swarming you and things like that. They've really sort of done a lot with the core battle rules to wrap around and make it so you can play it however you want, really. So yeah,
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, cool. I feel like we've said everything that we need to say or can say about Warcry. So that means it's time to bring this ship to harbor. We are Tiny Plastic People. You can find us at tinyplasticpeople.com. We are also on the Twitters at Tiny Plastic Pals. Where else can we be found? You can email the Tiny Plastic People at gmail.com if you want to write in about how much you love Warcry or how much you hate Warcry, I guess, and how we're all wrong about it or something. I don't know. Any engagement is good engagement, and I don't have to read the emails, so you know, you can really open up as far as I care. Don't actually send us abuse, please. I have been your host, Rachel. You can find me on Twitter at Nershly, Nershly. John, where can people find you?
I rarely post on Instagram as at @wham_badger or on Twitter as at @badger_wham.
What about you, JD?
I am on Instagram as jd.paints.
Great. I think we have cried a war. And now we must go and cry some more. I'm not sure what you're doing with the rest of your Sunday, but I don't have any.
Cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war. Cry.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's the right true.
Podcast title right there.
Right. Good night, everyone.
See you later.